a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 240. I never know what episode. 245, I think. Maybe it's 246. Mid-240s. How am I supposed to think on a day like today? So I didn't do a show yesterday, and you guys got a rerun. And I didn't do a show because it's just like at that point in the day when it was time to do a show, I was just like, the only thing I'm going to, I had too many ideas and was just completely just, all I was going to do was rant about the election and, you know, and speculate and what was going to happen and go on and on and on. And I just decided two things. A, there was just enough of that already happening in the public sphere and that I wasn't going to be able to do anything else. That's all I was going to do. It was all that was coming out of me all day. And that quite honestly, my show is on live at 9 PM Eastern and 6 PM. So it's like, that's when like the election results really heat up and like no one was going to be listening live last night. So it's like, why? I just decided, you know what? Well, no matter what happens tonight, either Trump's going to win or Clinton's going to win or some crazy thing's going to happen and Evan McMullen's going to take Utah and block each from getting 270 and there's going to be like, and it's going to be crazy. So there's going to be news and there's going to be something to reflect on. I'm just going to wait and do a show tomorrow, which is today, which is the show that you're listening to as we speak. So this is for at least part of the show. I've got a few things I want to talk about. And I actually, strangely enough, I just kind of looked over my notes and I kind of keep show ideas, kind of like segments I want to do or some things I want to talk about on the show in a little file. And I'll kind of look, go back over and look at something and pull it up. And it's funny, the two that I, through two of the five I had, three of the five that I had left, I think that maybe more of it, maybe five out, maybe, yeah, maybe four out of the five actually fit really well in this post-election. So I'm going to talk a little bit about just the election and about the results and what happened. And I want to talk about, and then I also want to talk about my experience of the aftermath and kind of the way people are relating to each other today a little bit. And then I want to talk about kind of a moment that we're having and maybe something that we could move past and how this could be a good thing to move on. And then I want to talk about some ways to help you get yourself a little less anxious with all this negativity going around. So, all right. So that's kind of my general plan. So, all right. So last night, Donald J. Trump was elected the next president of the United States of America. If you listen to my show at all, you know that I have been pretty doggone never Trump. I've been pretty anti-Trump. I have come over time. If you've been listening for a long time, you know that I was predicting that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months ago, I changed my prediction and I said I think that Trump was going to win. And I kind of wish I would have done a show yesterday early in the day and made some predictions and I would have predicted that Trump would have won. And it's funny, I would have predicted the exact states that he carried that are normally Democratic states that people didn't think he had a chance in as being states that were going to go for Trump. And here's the thing, if you look at the map, what you're going to see is, and this is why I predicted this. This is why I thought this was going to happen. And, I wasn't altogether happy about it, but you know, I'll say this about last night. I was on the edge of my seat watching this stuff for a while. I went to bed. I still haven't seen his speech. I had to open the shop this morning, and I haven't gotten a chance to even watch his speech yet. I went to bed before it was final because I saw it coming down the tracks, and I woke up early this morning and checked my phone to see who won, and sure enough, it was Trump. And here's the thing: the reason I switched my position is I saw in my hometown, near my hometown, a friend of mine from back in high school was talking about how the polls he thought were just, you know, completely inaccurate and deceptive. And we know that there was over polling and all that stuff that came out in the WikiLeaks thing. And so he said, hey, no comments, just one word. Anything negative will be taken down. Just tell me, respond to this thread. Who are you voting for? And everyone said Trump. It was like 98% Trump. And I'm like, okay, now this is Southern Missouri, and so this is a fairly rural area. So I know Trump has a big following there, but it's 98%. Now, so the area that I'm from has a really, really strong Democratic contingent. Now, but where I'm from also, most people are fairly socially conservative. But the issue is around the unions mostly, and people who are union workers and who have worked in factories their whole life, they vote Democratic, and because, you know, Republicans are the party of management. It's fat cats in pinstripe suits, smoking cigars, living off the backs of the work of real men. And I have differing thoughts on most modern labor unions. And I don't think the common man and the working man is the union man anymore. I think it's a small business owner with 3 to 10 employees who's being crushed by regulation and taxes. So, but I started seeing some of my friends who I know are socially conservative. They've always been hardcore Democrats saying Trump on this thread. So I started going to some of my friends' pages that weren't on that thread from different parts of the world and looking up people I know that are like involved in that kind of, from those union places and who have been worked in factories and whatnot, maybe are out of work. And I started seeing a lot of them with Trump stuff on their Facebook page. And it hit me. I'm like, oh, he's going to carry the Rust Belt. And I think what happened is that a bunch of people who were dead set on good factory union jobs being the path to prosperity in America had won too many election cycles without there being any factories to put a union in. And they finally figured out that, look, if someone doesn't make it really attractive for someone to build a factory and let them keep a good amount of that money that they're going to make out of that factory, they're not going to build one. And if they don't build one, we don't get jobs in it, and we can't unionize and then collectively bargain with the guy that owns the factory. We can't have a union in a factory if there isn't a factory. And the only way that these factories are going to get built is if someone thinks they can make and keep a decent amount of money by building it. If not, why would, if you're a rich guy and you've got $10 million sitting in a bank account or sitting in some really safe investments, pulling you a few percent that you can live off of well, why would you risk that and buy a building and put drill presses in and buy a bunch of steel and try to create a bracket or something so that some people could have a job? Why would you do that other than just maybe charity? Why would you risk your capital if you didn't think, oh, I can make some real money and I can, you know, put some more money back and I can leave it to my kids and my kids' kids, you know? You have to, there's an incentive there in kind of self-preservation. And if you got money and you're sitting on it, you have to have a reason to do something. And so I think what happened is that a lot of these people kind of decided, look, we want there to be some jobs for us to work in. We're tired of being unemployed. We're tired of being underemployed. I remember the good times back when the steel factory, the car factory was still going. we did well. You know, this has really come home to me. Where I've been working in Flint, Michigan on this project with the Catholic community of Flint, and I've gotten up close and very cozy with post-industrialization, and it's brutal, man. You want to see what it looks like? Go to Flint, Michigan, drive past that Buickle. And I think that, I don't think Michigan went, I haven't looked at the map today. I don't know if Michigan went, Trump or Clinton. I know it was close, but I think that was the thing. Also, now then also, obviously a lot of people have decided that these people are both not good human beings, but this one at least has said that he acknowledges that it's in his best interest to appoint Supreme Court justices that are pro-life and says that he's going to do so. The other one has promised, Clinton promised to not do so, and she's someone who will do what she says she's going to do, even if she has to break the law and collude and do whatever she has to do. She will get done what she says she's going to do. I trust her to do what she says she's going to do, no matter what the consequences. And so they were hedging their bet, and on the issue of life and pro and the Supreme Court, and also the issue of religious freedom. I mean, we are just one or two Supreme Court decisions away from not doing gay marriages in your Catholic church being deemed an act of hate and being shut down, having your nonprofit status pulled or something, you know? So people bit their tongue, held their breath, and voted for Trump and didn't feel good about it, but they thought it was the best thing to do. And what shocked me is how shocked everybody was by this. The liberal media, all these people were just shocked by this, that this would... And so that's what we want to talk about when we get back. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. So, by no surprise, we're talking about the 2016 election. We're talking about Donald Trump becoming our next president. If you're just tuning in or if you haven't listened to the show before, to say that I have been anti-Trump, especially during the primaries, is an understatement. I have ranted so hard against Donald Trump. And so last night, man, it's kind of like I've said about baseball. I'm a Cardinals fan. There's two things that we like to do as Cardinals fans. We love to watch the Cardinals win. And we love to watch the Cubs lose. And this year, I was deprived of both of those things in the postseason. And so it hurt. This time around, it's similar in politics. I like to watch my guy that I really love and that I wanted to see have be in there win. Or I like to watch the Clintons lose. It's like, so there was kind of, even though if, so I could suspend, there was times last night that I could suspend this being Trump getting in and just think of it as Hillary getting beat. And I really enjoyed those moments. And part of what I enjoyed was watching, not enjoyed. It was just, I was just shocked, kind of shocked by all these people in the mainstream media, all these very liberal, journalist types. And they just could not understand how in the world this could happen. And because they see they see him as an endorsement of racism and misogyny. Now, I think he is kind of a misogynist. There's no doubt about that. He's a sexist. He's a total misogynist. And, but you know what? These men with power It's like they almost always are, right? It seems like, as best we can tell, Obama and President Bush, we're pretty decent human beings, and there's no one seems to think or talk about how they were doing anything on the side or whatever. But, you know, I mean, remember Clinton? Remember her husband, Bill Clinton, the guy that chased down and slept and, you know, assaulted everything in a skirt? It's like, and then Hillary, who tried to destroy these women because they got in the way of her political gain. I mean, let's go farther back. It's like, look at Kennedy. It's like, look at Lyndon Johnson. My God, the guy used to do like interviews. He would call someone in to do an interview with him as president, and he would sit on the toilet. He was like known for exposing himself to people and stuff. He was a real piece of work. That guy was a weirdo. There's all these books and biographies about Lyndon Johnson coming out. That guy was a weirdo. I mean, he had some serious issues. Men that are hard-driving men in power typically are. I don't think we should be shocked. That's why it's funny. A friend of mine's mom is really super Trump. You know, she's super pro Trump. And when the whole thing with and she's, you know, she's an older woman who's been in a profession that is kind of dominated by men for a really long time, since the late 50s, early 60s, you know. And when that came out, we brought it up to her about, look at how he talks about women. She goes, "Oh, honey, that's how men are." That's how all men are. That's just like, I put up with that crap my whole life. That's how men are, you know? And it's like, I think there was part of it where it was like, people are kind of like, yeah, he's a big, fat, rich guy in power. They're all like that. Right. So these people see this through the lens of like misogyny. So he is a misogynist, no doubt about it. Racism. I mean, there's the typical, he did say some stuff that I thought was a little over the line. I do think it's kind of interesting that I'll play devil's advocate. You know, what's that guy, Yiannopoulos, the gays for Trump guy? Whenever everyone was freaking out over Trump's saying that he wanted a religious test, or he wanted an ideological test if Muslims were going to come in the country, and everyone freaked out, that guy comes out and he's like, out of all the people running for president, who's the one that says, hey, if you want to, like, if you think gay people should be stoned and, you know, thrown off a building or killed for being gay, you're not welcome in our country? Trump, he's the only one. This guy's a gay guy, and he's like, he's the only one that's saying, no, if you're some backwards guy from some dust-ridden country that thinks that gays should be thrown off of buildings, we don't want you here, you know? So politics make such weird bedfellows, you know? So I think he wasn't as racist as people claimed he was during the, I think he made some statements that were unfortunate, and not, he didn't clarify things the way he should have. And I think part of that was on purpose, to fire up kind of the more rural, uneducated aspect of his base. And I think he did use foment anger and even racism to get himself into power. Like I said, once again, I sound like I'm defending Trump. I'm not. I have been, if you've listened to the show at all, you know, I have been like, no, never, never. And for the record, I did not vote for the man. So, I didn't vote for Hillary either. So just for the record. But watching these people on the TV last night, just going, they just could not believe that this was happening. They'd seen their polls. I mean, this man is nothing but racism and misogyny. That's all they see. They see him and they see racism and misogyny. And there's been a lot of articles written about this, and there's going to be a lot more written about, where the people who are in power, especially in the media, have no idea what in the world the life, motives, and thought of white, poor, working class people are in America. And when the numbers started coming in last night, there was like higher numbers than you would expect from Hispanics and blacks and educated white women and all this stuff, all these, they love demographics. They love to break everybody down into these demographic things. And they were just throwing these words around like, well, educated women over such and such age, you know, blah, blah, and black men with this and that. They were just chopping everybody in these identity politics and then just trying to figure out how this happened. I'm like, look at the map. It's the Rust Belt. It's people who used to have jobs in factories who want to work again. That was the bulk of what put him over. That's what turned blue states red and got him the electoral count. So I want to turn now and talk about the aftermath of this. Facebook has just been a cesspool of arguing and attacking each other, friends attacking each other. I witnessed two friends go at it, and then one of them unfriend the other one on Facebook this morning. It's just been absolutely nuts. I got not defriended, but, you know, definitely cast into a category for defending that, no, not half of our nation are racist, misogynist, tyrannical, horrible people now. Over half of our, roughly half, I think Clinton won the popular vote by, well, it was like 0.6 last numbers I saw. I haven't looked at the numbers in a while. I'll try to look at them over the break. But 0.6. So, I mean, this country is literally, has been for a while, is roughly 50-50. It's divided. And no, half of our country are not hardcore racist misogynists. A ton of people I know that are Christian people, Catholic and evangelicals and charismatics. My own mom, her and I argued like the crazy about this. I kept telling her that I there was no way I could vote for Trump. And she was telling me I was crazy that I had to vote for Trump. These are one issue voters and they are just hedging their bets on the life issue. And I don't, I've said this before, Trump has his very first Supreme Court pick that he floated as a possibility. It was like his sister-in-law or something. Who's like super, super pro-choice. It's like, I mean, he doesn't strike me as someone we know he was pro-choice until fairly recently. He's not ideological at all. He's certainly not like a right-wing pro-life ideologue. And so I don't really believe him that he will put all originists for the respect of religious freedom and pro-life and all these issues in the Supreme Court. And I don't think that the Supreme Court is the part of the federal level that stuff should really be hashed out at. And I don't think the federal level is the level that stuff should be hashed out at. But I'm showing my old Ron Paul stripes now that I think the state should handle this stuff. Anyway, no, people have not all turned into a bunch of misogynist racists just because they voted for Trump. Some of them were just pissed and wanted to like throw a brick through a window of the political system. And so some punk rock guy that comes out there saying all kinds of politically incorrect stuff and refusing to play the game and making everybody mad on both sides, they were like, right on. They just wanted to see someone upset the apple cart, you know? But no, not everyone. Everyone that I know that voted for Trump, whether they were voting their wallet or voting their ideology and hedging their bets, I don't know. I know very few people that were like, yes, I just love Donald Trump. They were all like, okay, clearly this is not who we really want. But given the reality of the two choices, given that one of these two is going to win, you have to pick. And I'll give you an analogy I heard over the weekend when I get back from the break. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll see you on the other side.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, we are doing the post-election musing and reflection here. So so I pulled up the map of the results during the break, and I'm looking at, man, look at this, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan. It's just like all this stuff went red this time around. Those are all places where manufacturing is the key, that the loss of manufacturing jobs, the need for new industry, people fed up with not having work to do that pays anything. I mean, those are places that this post-industrialism, just the Rust Belt. I mean, it's all through there, and the post-industrial auto belt in Michigan. It's just, I think that that is for the most part the key. I mean, there's there's a lot of states that broke down, just typically, you know, along party lines like they normally do. Of course, the entire West Coast is blue, like anyone surprised at that. And the entire Northeast, you know, all the way down to, is blue. Chicago, you know, Illinois, blue, which is not Illinois blue. If you break it down, I should look at counties on Illinois. I guarantee you that it was Carbondale, Illinois, and probably Carbondale, Chicago, maybe Springfield, and everywhere else was red. This is really a breakdown in a lot of ways between working class and non-working class, between rural and city. And this time around, the post-industrial frustration won out over the old alliances, and they just didn't go that direction. It's always, every 4 years when we have this, have an election, I look at these maps, and it's like, here, I'm looking at the map, and it's like the West Coast is blue, the Northeast is blue, a few little spots of Union stronghold, like in Chicago, Minnesota went blue. That's pretty typical. Wisconsin went red this time. Colorado, my state that I live in right now, blue. Not surprised by that. New Mexico, I was kind of a little, that's a toss up what's going on there. It looks like Arizona's going to go red. It's pink right now on, you know, it looks like it's heading that direction. Michigan is pink right now. So you look and you just see this like ocean of red, and these two coasts are blue. Now that was at its absolute starkest last night when I was watching the results, and I posted this morning. It's kind of like, I think this is the hermeneutic of the election. I think this is the optic through which to view and understand what's going on. And that was, let me find it here. It's hard to find 'cause it's so small. Trying to find DC. Trying to get District of Columbia here. Delaware. I can't even get, it's too small to get my cursor on. But last night it was, Washington, D.C. was 93% Clinton, 4% Trump. It's like, there's the difference between where our government is and how they view the world in the rest of the country. That explains greatly what is going on. I mean, that is, that says it all. I think that says absolutely all of it. It's making me mad. On their little map, you can move your cursor over it, and I can't get the District of Columbia to pop up. Oh, well. I want to see what the current numbers are. I'll look it up on this at next break. But yeah, 93% were Clinton last night. 4% were Trump. That, I think that says everything, that the people in Washington and people in the media clearly do not understand the common man in flyover country. It's just not something that they understand. And I tell you where the, and it's interesting. I think that I want to talk about how we can move on from this a little bit. I think we need to start talking to each other. And it's funny. It's like one issue. I saw a video before the election of white liberals, mostly college students, and they were asking them about voter ID laws and whether they were racist. And they were just like, they're like, yeah, because black people are less likely to have an ID and they might not know how to use the internet to get an ID. And I was like, they were saying all this stuff that they were trying to be very politically correct. And they've been told that this was a position and they sounded so incredibly racist. And so the same videographer went over to Harlem and he started just randomly stopping black people on the street and going, hey, we're just taking a poll today. Do you have ID on you? Well, yeah. Do you know anybody that doesn't have ID? They're like, no, everyone I know has an ID. So if you needed to get a new ID, where would you get it? Well, I mean, the DMV's over 123rd. It's like they were just like everyone knew where the DMV was. That was one of the things. Well, they may not know where to find one. And it's like, so do you know how to use the internet? Yes, I use the internet all day, every day at work. My kids have iPhones. We all use the internet all the time. So you know how to look up where to get an ID. Yes. What if someone said that voter ID laws were racist because black people can't work the internet or can't find an ID? They're like, well, I'd say that person's just ignorant. It's just like, when you go talk, so look at, here's one particular issue where people who want to have voter ID have to have legal ID to be able to vote. People said they were all racist because they were trying to suppress the black vote. And then you go actually talk to some actual black people in an urban environment and listen to what they have to say. And they're like, you ought to have an ID. It's like, they all have IDs. They hear the arguments from like a bunch of white liberals and it sounds crazy to them. Right. I think we saw that kind of like cluelessness last night in the coverage, and the shock was, and the reason why is that the people who are, so shocked by that are so far to the left in this country, the people, they don't actually know any of these people that they're supposedly representing their interests. They don't know them. They don't hang out with them. They don't spend time with them. They don't eat in the same places. They don't go to their restaurant. They don't know these people. And it was just, I think that what we have to start doing is I think we have to start talking to each other. I think that if you are a liberal and you are aghast that people that you know voted for Trump, you need to ask them, why did you vote for Trump? Don't yell at them. Don't call them a racist. And I'm seeing some people do that. My friend Trent, that teaches down at Baylor, used his Facebook wall and he said, okay, no comments. If you didn't vote for Trump, but I want to hear from you. I've been very much never Trump, but I haven't castigated anyone who was taking that route. I just want all of my friends who read this, if you voted for Trump, put on my wall your reasoning. What was it? Why did you do so? And everybody was like, wow, this is refreshing. Thanks for asking. And they all gave their reasons. And all these people down the line gave all their reasons. And I didn't see one person say, well, because I hate immigrants. I hate black people. I think women ought to be groped. I mean, nobody said that. So to treat everyone as if we are just all racist, if we didn't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, and a bunch of misogynists and a bunch of tyrannical white supremacists, then you're just missing the point. And we're going to have the exact same thing play out 4 years from now. More division. Now, I want to talk about a way to kind of move on from this a little bit. And it's like, okay, we've gotten to a point in our country and I think that we might be able to, use this as a, what's the thing they used to say? A teachable moment. This could be a teachable moment. Or I think, well, maybe, I mean, maybe not. Maybe we're not going to get to rock bottom because, you know, everybody's divided. Everybody's been divided for a while. But everybody hasn't been this divided. Like, I mean, this, it was amazing. I thought the people opposing Obama and then being accused of being racist because he was black and all that was bad, which for the record, I'll say again, I said it before, me and all my friends that are fairly conservative politically, the only thing we like about Obama for the most part is that he's black. I love the fact that we have a black president. I mean, I would have been, if Donald Trump was black, I would have been more likely to vote for him. It's like, I love that we can get past that kind of a thing in America. But I thought that was bad. I thought that kind of like vitriol was horrible and just bad. But man, this just made it so much worse, man. This was just like, I mean, at today I'm watching people, the way they're treating each other on Facebook and online, the things people are saying to each other, I'm just like, I am amazed by this, how people are just reducing other people to what they assume their intelligence level is or their motives must be because they voted for Trump. And I say that as someone who was a firm part of the Never Trump movement. I did not vote for Donald Trump, and I said that I would not vote for Donald Trump all along. So let's go to the break. We'll come back for the last segment. I want to try to move on a little bit from this. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, the final segment. You know, okay, we're at this place now where I think that we had all these Bernie Sanders supporters, and a lot of them didn't support Hillary. We have half of the Republican Party doesn't want to support Donald Trump. And everybody that did, I mean, a ton of people that did vote for him did it holding their nose. And a ton of Bernie people. I think if you really asked most people, who did you vote for? Be honest, name it by your motives. They would say, I voted for not Trump. I voted for not Hillary. No one voted for who they were voting for. No, I don't. I found very few people who actually liked and wanted either of these people in the Oval Office. They wanted to not have the other person in the Oval Office. And so they voted for what they would consider to be the lesser of two evils. And I've seen friends of mine on Facebook today saying, if you think that Donald Trump is a lesser of two evils, then you are an idiot and I don't think we can be friends. Because they see it all through the lens of race and gender. The people on the right that I know are like, I mean, if you don't see how evil Hillary is in Supreme Court justices and religious freedom and, you know, abortion and all that, then I don't know what you're thinking. You know, it's like everybody was just kind of like hedging their bets as best they could. So I saw this video over the weekend about it was on something about goals or something, and I couldn't get the link other than just like to some random Facebook page, so I may try to find it again. But it was this guy, and he looked like, I think he was a rabbi. He had a long white beard and kind of the way he carried himself, and I thought it was kind of dark. They had him lit, but I thought I could see a yarmulke on his head. So maybe he might have been a rabbi, so and so. Maybe he was just might have been some thinker, but I think he had a yarmulke on. So, but they never named him on this video. They just had this guy talking. And he was talking about lobsters and how lobsters, they start growing and they're growing and they're starting to grow too much and they're getting too big for their shell. And their shell is tight and there's pressure and they have serious discomfort. And they have this hard edge on the outside of them to protect them, to keep them from being vulnerable. But it's too confining because they've grown too much to fit into this. And so what they do is they crawl under a rock, get themselves into a safe place where predators can't get to them, but they can't get around and hunt and eat or anything. They just like basically just kind of load up on what they need. And then they go under a rock and then they shed their armor, their shell. And they sit there and they wait until they grow a new one and they kind of their outside hardens and becomes a new shell that they fit in. And then they can come out from under the rock and go about. So he compared that to discomfort and pain and crisis and getting to a point where your old situations, your old ways of thinking, your old habits, your old job, your old way of doing things, this are too confining to you. And sometimes you have to become vulnerable, find a place of safety, become vulnerable, and then come back bigger and stronger again than you were. And I think maybe we might have gotten to a point to where we can look at this two-party system. We can look at the way these things break down. We can look at conservatives thinking about the poor this way and liberals thinking about how to feed the poor this way. And you can look at all these dichotomies, all these different dichotomies about what taxes are for and what spurs economic growth and what role does fairness play in all this and all these different dichotomies that I think a lot of them are false dichotomies. It's kind of a, you know, like the old joke that I always talk about where one guy says the glass is half full, the other one says it's half empty, and that's pessimist and optimist, right? And then there's someone that comes along and says, we have twice as much glass as we need. That glass is twice as big as it needs to be. And I go, you were thinking about it. We were so pitched in this dichotomy of thinking about it, of how much, which half is this water? Is it half full or half empty? And we hadn't even thought about the relationship between the size of the container and what it's containing. That just isn't how we were viewing it. You know, we were looking at it from a completely different perspective. And so I think that I think that the liberal conservative divide is over. I think that we need to start talking about this in a different way. And I think that that way that we need to talk about a good solid rubric that we can start talking about this through is Catholic social doctrine. I think that the equal poles of solidarity and subsidiarity with the emphasis on the dignity of the human person, a preferential option for the poor, being completely pro-life, not just anti-abortion, and the view on war and the death penalty and poverty and you look at like poverty, I mean, looking at personal responsibility in the relationship to the dignity of the human person in helping someone and the role of family and the role of the family in society, the role of the family in poverty, the role of the family, the role of government in creating jobs and in freedom and small business and all this stuff. I think that Catholic social doctrine is that new paradigm where we can use the tools of kind of like local control and subsidiarity and personal responsibility and all that stuff that are kind of like typically conservative principles to truly care about the poor and to truly care about the disenfranchised and to truly care about the widow and the foreigner and someone who the orphan, the people we really need to care about the disenfranchised. We need to care about the displaced. We need to care about these people. And I think that with this pitched either or we're just, we've just, we're in it. We've backed ourselves into a series of false dichotomies, and it's like a lobster that's grown too big for his shell. We're going to have to shed these categories and start talking about something in a different way. And I think that has to start by talking to each other and by assuming the best of each other. I think that we need to look at our friends that hated Trump and was willing, were Catholics even, who were willing to vote for Clinton to not get Trump in, and ask them, why do you think that way? Why did you think that? What was your mentality? What about this? And we have to do, but assume that they're good people that are trying. And if one of your friends voted for Trump and you're like a never Trump person like I was, don't assume they're an idiot, racist, misogynist, jerk that now just wants to enslave everybody that's not white or something. Just stop thinking like that. You know, I was having an argument with a friend on Facebook, and I purposely reminded him of us living together at one point and how many conversations we had and how much fun we had together, and jokes we had together, and how much time we spent together, and how much we kind of like helped each other out and took care. I mean, it's like, do you really think that I'm that different of a person, or have you really become so different of a person that you can't see who I am anymore? I mean, anyway, final thought here. There was a great article in Inc. about neuroscience, says that listening to this one song reduces anxiety by up to 65%. So I think a lot of people today need to have their anxiety reduced. So there's this song called Weightless by the Marconi Union. And then there's a whole playlist of songs for everything from classical music to modern kind of trance and stuff that has been either developed in relationship with sound therapists or analyzed by sound therapists and checked in labs. And it is music that has been shown to deeply relax you and take you out of a place of anxiety and into a place of kind of quiet confidence and creativity. And so I'm going to put that up on the, on the website, on the show notes. And, I'm going to link that. So you can go over there, get this Spotify playlist, and you can listen to this, stuff and, chill the hell out, man. It's like, oh, so that's my plan, is to chill out. So, and, my real plan is to, finish up this show and, run over to the old Sushi Katsu before they close at 2:30 and get me some sushi, because if there's one day that I need sushi, it's on post-election day, because nothing relaxes you like a good sushi coma. See, and you should be proud of me. I could have went and got sushi and then recorded, but you know what, how I get when I've had all you can eat sushi at Sushi Katsu. That's when you get these sushi coma episodes, and I'm all spacier than normal because I'm half asleep from all the carbs. So, yeah, nothing fixes you like sushi. Maybe I'll get some lobster sushi to think about that shell we've outgrown. So anyway, I'm going to give you some homework as we go. Your homework is to find someone on Facebook or in your workplace or in your friend group that you firmly disagree with on one side or the other from last night. Give them a hug. Tell them you love them. Tell them you do not reduce them to their political positions, whether they were right or whether you agree or not. And affirm a friendship across the ideological aisle. And if it's going well, maybe grab a drink together and have a conversation. Maybe listen to Marconi Union and let it get all relaxed before you do that. All right, so there you go. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.